In this highly polarized, politicized, controversy-filled world, I'm going to try to start with a statement that really I think is unanimously accepted. We have to do everything we can to end poverty. On nearly every flight you take, every subway sign, any website you log into, there'll be an initiative, a foundation, a charity dedicated towards poverty, towards ending hunger. And suffice it to say, I think we can all agree that that is an endeavor that we should all take, do our best to take care of. However, over the next few minutes, perhaps what we are going to discuss is this in fact a Jewish utopian ideal? In the Jewish society, obviously, presumably, we want to remove poverty. But however, upon looking into Shemitah further, perhaps there is something deeper going on. As Josh mentioned, our topic today is stimulus checks, voluntary unemployment, and the implications for society. Over the next few minutes, we're going to discuss, in light of specifically the recent developments during COVID and the economic downturn, in which stimulus checks and voluntary unemployment became rampant, we are going to discuss whether, from the Jewish perspective, we should make it such that this becomes a permanent solution. We are going to do what we can to discuss that a stimulus check, which preemptively, proactively ensures that everyone, no matter your situation, no matter your circumstance, has their needs taken care of, is this a Jewish ideal? Is this a Jewish ideal? To get a bit of a background on what the economic impact payments were, colloquially referred to as stimulus checks, a family of two, with a husband and wife and two children, over the course of the year of COVID, had received about $13,000. Uninitiated, unprovoked, $13,000. Furthermore, taking advantage of this, if one received those stimulus checks, in addition, due to the COVID-19 pandemic, health scares, people would then take off their jobs or were forced to close their jobs or were laid off. What happened was, is people became unemployed. And the average state unemployment benefit in the USA is $308 per week. So if you add that up for two parents, going back to our previous family, that's $16,000 a parent, equaling $32,000 just from unemployment, just for, as we see in the picture, just for sitting on your couch, $32,000. One combines the $32,000 with the $13,000 of stimulus checks. This resulted in a family of two parents and two children, in a $45,000 into their bank account, uninitiated, without anything, without work, was simply sitting and watching TV. In fact, in a Brookings article, Brookings is a think tank in Washington, D.C., they have a number of quotes from people throughout the country, and one quote I found quite compelling and provocative is, "I prefer to work, but sadly I'd make more staying home." This was someone claiming, and if I'm happy to share the article with anyone after, the whole study, this was someone claiming that they enjoy working, and they were disappointed and frustrated that they couldn't see their coworkers and develop themselves. Yet nevertheless, they stayed home because $45,000, as we mentioned, is quite a large amount. Seemingly, if we have the funds to give $45,000 uninitiated to anyone, regardless of situation, perhaps this is the way that we can solve, if not world hunger, but at the very least, we could solve the situation in America. In fact, there are those, perhaps most infamously or most famously, Andrew Yang, who was in 2020 was a presidential nominee, and in 2021 was a New York City mayoral candidate. Andrew Yang likes to coin it as a freedom dividend. Andrew Yang believes we should take the lessons that we've learned from the COVID-19 pandemic, from the stimulus checks, and say, hey, let's get out in front of this. Let's ensure that no matter your situation, every single person has their basic needs, their rent, taken care of. This way, intuitively, and we appreciate this, everyone has their basic needs taken care of, and they can go out, work for their family, spend time with their children as they see fit, and truly become the best version of themselves. And proponents of this freedom dividend, as Andrew Yang calls it, is we have shown that we have the finances for it, so why not keep this forward? So what we are going to try to discuss today is if we take a look under the hood of Shemitah, if we take a look under the hood of what the exact parameters of Shemitah is this true that Shemitah would agree with this? Shemitah has two main components to it. On the one hand, there's something called Shemitas Karka, which means that all of the land, all of the fruits, essentially become ownerless. That no matter who you are, whether it's your land or not, you could walk in and take what you need and take for your family. This is quite obviously a major boon for anyone who is in poverty, who is in financial distress. They could grab this and take care of their families once every 7 years. But in addition to that, there's an economic aspect. The economic aspect is referred to as Shmitas Kesafim. And clearly, Shmitas Kesafim, as we are going to discuss for the next few minutes, is a canceling of debts. That no matter where you are right now financially, no matter what your financial situation, your obligations are, what your holdings are, we cancel those debts and we sort of give you a reset or ability to recalibrate your finances. Quite intuitively, if one takes a look in the Torah itself, in the two times that the Torah presents, two of the times, I should say, that the Torah presents Shemitah, both in Parshas Bahar and in Parshas Re'eh, right after the concept of Shemitah, if someone looks on your right-hand side, U'b'shana ha'shviyah Shabbos Shabboson Yel Aretz, right after the Psukim discuss Shemitah, right after that, a few Psukim later, the Psukim then discuss the concept of Tzedakah. V'chi yamocha achicha u'mata yado imach ve'chzatabo. And you should help out the ani, the person in pain and suffering. Similarly, in Parshas Re'eh, later in the Torah, Mikeid Sheva Shanim Tase Shmita. At the end of 7 years, we have a Shmita, and then a few psukim later, we have the initial commandment of Tzedakah. Ki Pesoach Tiftach Es Yadcha Lo. When someone opens up their hand to you and says, "Please give me money. I am struggling. I am in pain." Ve'avei Tavidei Dai Mechsero. Give him enough. Fill in his needs. Give him what he needs. So again, we see twice, without even deep examination, we see the inherent connection, the relationship between Shemitah, we see the connection inherent between Shemitah and charity. Just to take a bit of a closer look at Shemitas Kesafim, as we say, the debt cancellation, every 7 years, the Pasuk tells us, V'zed dvar ha-shmitah, shmot kol bal ma'aseh yado. We should cancel anyone who has a debt, anything, shmot kol bal ma'aseh yado, asher yaseh birei'ehu, which he lent to his friend. And the question becomes, what debt are we referring to? Is this a debt of a sale, if I haven't fully paid you back? Is this a renter's agreement? Do I no longer have to pay rent during Shemitah? If I cause you damages, do I now not have to pay you back? If I am an employee of yours, do I no longer get paid because that is an obligation you owe me? Where do we draw the line about which debts are canceled? Where is this line drawn? In the Mishnah in Shviyas, when the halachos are being discussed, when all the laws are being discussed about what is canceled, the Mishnah says as follows. I apologize for it being so small. Hakafas hakanas, a store tab. A number of stores, what they'll do is, certainly in the times of the Talmud, what they would do is you don't necessarily pay every single time you show up to the store, but you keep a tab. Many people have that now. You keep a tab. So says the Mishnah, on that renting, on that store tab, ena mishametes. Mishametes meaning to cancel. The laws of Shemitah, the laws of debt cancellation, do not apply. Continues the Mishnah, v'im asel milve, but if it's a loan, if you turn it into a loan, then it is canceled. And some commentators explain that what is unique, that this is something unique to a store tab, that what's a tab? A tab you pay after a certain amount of time, and it's a specific technicality as it pertains to store tabs that's beyond the scope of our discussion. But many of the major commentators, and the one that is quoted for our actually for law, is that the specific reason that we quoted v'ma'asou milva, and if it turns into a loan that I give to you, and you then have to pay me back, is because specifically a loan is what is canceled during Shemitah. If we return to the previous slide, the Pasuk said what? Lo yigos es rei ehu, that you should not claim from your friend. And the commentators point out that if this was referring to all debts, if this was referring to all obligations, we simply would not be using the words as a friend or the like. So it must be we are specifically referring to personal loans. And the question is why? What makes a loan unique as opposed to any of the other types of obligations that we could be discussing? In fact, all of the other obligations that we discussed, such as a sale or damages or a renting agreement or an employee salary, all of those are a quid pro quo arrangement. It's that I am giving something to you, and you are returning something to me. We are exchanging something. It is a barter transaction. However, a loan is the only one of those that is one-sided. A loan, if I give you a loan, the only thing I am getting back is my money, specifically in light of the fact that according to Torah law, you are not allowed to receive interest for a loan. So in light of that, what makes a loan unique, as opposed to all of the other types of obligations, as opposed to an employee, if I'm getting a benefit because you are working for me, and I'm giving you a benefit because we're paying. But a loan, there is no benefit for the lender. The lender receives nothing other than his money in return. And therefore, it is a specific type, it is a specifically unique chesed. And accordingly, one actually receives a specific mitzvah, a unique mitzvah. The pasuk says, "Im kesef talvez ami es ha'ani imach." One receives a separate mitzvah. It's true for all chesed, one receives a mitzvah for all charity, but specifically alone, one receives a mitzvah itself. Furthermore, not only does one receive a special mitzvah for giving a loan, it is also, in fact, the highest form of charity. In the Rambam, in the Maimonides, when he is explaining the laws of charity, the Rambam explains that Maila Gedola, the highest level, She'ein L'maila Mimenaze, the highest form of charity that someone can attain, is what? And if you see in the bold, O Ahalva, or a loan. A loan, giving someone money for absolutely no reason other than to help them out, is the highest form of charity. And this makes a lot of sense, again, in light of what we said, that you are doing it one-sided, unprovoked, they are the beneficiary, and you are getting nothing from it. Accordingly, it makes a lot of sense, in light of this, that it is specifically loans that are being canceled. Why? Because who are the beneficiary of loans? In light of the two mitzvahs, the mitzvah is that one should lend to aniyim, to those who are poor, to those who are in a difficult situation. We should do our best to lend to them. We should do our best to give to them. Accordingly, who are the ones that are the recipients of loans? It is generally those stricken with poverty. Accordingly, Shemitah comes in once every 7 years and says those loans that are primarily owned by or held by aniyim, held by those in struggling financial situations, we turn to them and say, we are now canceling that debt. That debt is not there for you because, again, the whole goal of Shemitah, as we've discussed, is to connect Shemitah. It's sort of a reset or a recalibration for aniyim. But perhaps there's another perspective. Perhaps there's a deeper look. Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook, along with the Chazon Ish, in the early 20th century, was one of the primary voices for all halachos, for all laws relating to Eretz Yisrael, related to the land of Israel. Rav Cook has many works on the laws of living in Israel and tithing in Israel and living in Israel, and specifically Shemitah itself. Until today, Rav Cook, as one sees there on the right-hand side, Shabbat Ha'aretz, Rav Cook has a sefer specifically dedicated to the laws of Shemitah. And Rav Cook says something incredible. Says something so fascinating that when I saw this for the first time, I had to continuously read it. I think I read it 4 or 5 times before fully understanding it. Rav Cook was such a leader as it pertained to the laws of Eretz Yisrael that the Chazon Ish himself, who was one of the primary Talmudists, one of the primary halachists in the 20th century, in the week he moved to Eretz Yisrael, he sent a shaila, he sent a halachic inquiry to Rav Cook. And Rav Cook says something absolutely unbelievable about the Shemitas Ksafim, about the canceling of debts that we've discussed so far. Rav Cook says as follows. He says it's not true. Of course it is true, that Shemitah is to help out and recalibrate the Ani's finances. But it is also doing so much more than that. What Shemitah is doing is, if one sees in the blue, Ki krash Shemitah laHashem on the top. The goal of Shemitah is to realize that it is Shemitah for Hashem. If one sees the top line, Hatachlis HaIkaris, the main goal of Shemitah, Hu mipnei ki krash Shemitah laHashem. Because what is going on? As we mentioned earlier, loans are one-sided. Loans are, you came to me in distress, and I said, here is a loan to get you back on your feet. Here is a loan. I am the malva, I am the lender, and you are the lova. And says Rav Cook in the green, what that becomes is this relationship becomes an eved lova li'ish malva. the borrower becomes an eved. The borrower becomes a slave, even if it's only emotionally. Technically, you're not my slave if I were to give you a loan. But emotionally, you feel controlled. Emotionally, you may feel as if you belong to me. As we see in the red, Shehachmiya v'ha'avdos tiye mutba'as b'lev mi sheyargish al atzma. What does that mean? It means, precious Rabbi, it means that the feeling of downtroddenness, the feeling of pain, the feeling of suffering is built in to taking a loan. As we see on the right, the borrower feels weak and dependent on man. And furthermore, it is not just a problem from the borrower, but the lender himself, as he says on the top in blue, lahasir es ha'ol ha'yosir kaved shemiskabit l'ragli shlitas ha'ashir malhaniyim. It is very easy, if one is giving loans, if one is doing chesed, to, of course that is a mitzvah, of course we encourage that. However, it is extremely easy, if someone is giving loans, to say, look at me, I am so haughty, I am so godlike, God could provide for them, but look at me, I am providing for them. So says Rav Kook something unbelievable. It's not just for the aniyim that we want to reset their finances once every 7 years. There's another presentation, I believe, discussing bankruptcy. And it's true that we are essentially helping the aniyim file for bankruptcy. But more so than this, says Rav Kook, this is a bein adam l'makom ideal. The idea is this is a relationship between us and God. A goal of Shemitah is to realize and appreciate and internalize that it is God who controls our finances. It is not the rich person who is giving the loan, and it's not the poor person who is a failure because he had to accept the loan. But rather, it is God solely who is controlling the finances. And that is the goal of why it is specifically a loan. It is specifically a loan because that is what creates an unhealthy dynamic, both from man to man, but even more so in our relationship with God. And that is what Rav Kook is highlighting when he says that that is why loans are being canceled. Furthermore, if we dive into the mitzvah of tzedakah specifically, we will see that this idea of Shemitah being dedicated towards understanding and appreciating that God controls finances, that is truly the goal of tzedakah as well. In the same Rambam, in the same Maimonides law that we saw a few minutes ago, where he claims that a halva, that a loan, is one of the highest forms of charity, he continues, and I have it in the bold, he says, what is the goal of these loans, or these gifts, or the highest form of charity? The highest form of charity is what? Kedei lechazek es yado, to strengthen the one stricken with poverty hand, to strengthen his hand, and this is the key phrase, ad shelo yitztarech librios lishol, until he no longer needs to rely on anyone else for aid. Says Maimonides, the goal of charity is to ultimately be able to dispense with aid. It's ultimately to be able to stand on your two feet. Accordingly, if we take a pause at this stage, I would believe that whether it's because of this idea of Ki Kra Shemitah LaHashem of Rav Kook, or because of this idea of tzedakah, of charity, truly being so that someone can find themselves back on their feet and find themselves no longer needing or wanting or striving to ask someone else for a favor. Therefore, I would think at this stage that a stimulus check, which again, as we discussed, is a preemptive measure, is a proactive measure before anyone even needs anything, I would think that that is not what our Rabbeim would have in mind. Because again, the goal of tzedakah, the goal of charity, is to help someone get back on their feet. But if we are going to preemptively, unprovoked, regardless of your situation, give you money, hand out money, then that would result in people becoming reliant on it, intensifying this reality in their minds that they rely on this money, rather than finding it within themselves and within their prayer, and within their relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and putting in their effort to receive funds. But if we're just giving out funds, this can potentially create an unhealthy relationship with finances, as now that person can rely on the government or rely on the community rather than on themselves and on God. But nevertheless, even if we are going to claim that there's no specific obligation of charity proactively, Or that's not the highest form of charity, or that's not the goal of the debt cancellation during the Shemitah year, is there a relationship specifically, is there an obligation for someone individually, but to help them before they help themselves? One of the most fascinating questions that I spent time looking into during this for the preparation of this conference is the following question. Is if someone asks for charity, if someone's struggling financially, if someone's not able to make ends meet, but they also are not working, and they also are sitting at home, perhaps looking for a job, but also refusing to take a job upon themselves, which could help them pay off their expenses. Is there a charity obligation to help them? As we discussed earlier, anytime someone opens up their hands, anytime someone asks you for charity, we have an obligation to help them. But do we have an obligation if they're not helping themselves? In a separate mitzvah, seemingly unrelated to tzedakah, there's two mitzvahs, a group of mitzvahs, in what's referred to as ti'ina uprika. These are two mitzvahs, as we see on the board, that are if you see your fellow walking, and perhaps nowadays we don't see people walking with their animals in the street, but nevertheless the idea holds true, that if you see your fellow walking, you see your fellow man walking, lo sira eschamor achicha, noflim baderech, falling down, hakim takim imo. You have to help him up. You have to help the animal up. Furthermore, the flip side, the pasuk, the mitzvah of prika, if someone is falling under the weight, if someone falling under the burden, in pain with the burden on their shoulders, on the pasuk on the left, shoncha rovetz tachas maso, who is falling under the burden that's on their shoulders, azov tazov imo, help him take off the burden off of his shoulders. And what a number of the commentators pick up on in both of these psukim is the words imo. The word imo means with him. The obligations in these psukim could have ended after the words hakim takim or azov tazov, that you have to help someone if you see they're struggling to carry their belongings, carry their groceries in, you have an obligation to help them. Or if they're falling under their burden, you have an obligation to help take them off. But the pasuk adds both of them, imo, with him, and explains the commentators, if this person says, you have an obligation to help me, I know that there's a mitzvah to help out your fellow Jew. So I'm going to sit down, do nothing, lay back, enjoy my time, not stretch my muscles, and you're going to carry in my belongings. Says the Torah, imo. You have to do it with him. If someone refuses to exert themselves, then you need not exert yourself with them. You need not exert yourself on their behalf. The question becomes, and a number of commentators grapple with this, is this true locally in these two specific halachos, in these two specific topics of helping a friend carry something, or would this apply, would this carry over to other mitzvahs, to other areas? In his commentary to the Torah, the Kli Yakar, Rabbi Shlomo Ephraim Lunshitz, unapologetically, clearly chooses the latter. He clearly says that the mitzvah of tzedakah also has this phrase of imo. This mitzvah, this obligation to help your friend, is only imo. And we're just going to read a phrase. He says, "Umikan tshuva al miksas ani." He says, this is true in the halachos of carrying the bags of your fellow, but it is even more true as it pertains to tzedakah. He says as follows. He says, "Ki ha'ani." He says as follows. He says that someone who is not trying to make ends meet on their own, someone who is not trying to fulfill their own obligations to make a living, to make ends meet, you therefore do not need to help them. But what makes the Kli Yakar unique is his formulation. The Kli Yakar says something so mind-blowing. He says as follows. He says, "Ki ha'ani yasa kol asher yimatzei bekocho lasos." Someone who is stricken with poverty has to do everything that is in his strength, that is in his grasp, what to do. He says, and then he continues, he says, "Uz," if you see on the second line, he says, "Uz chayiv kol ishme Yisrael," to help him out. Then, and only then, after someone puts in their own efforts, do we have to compliment those efforts and help him out. And he says, how do I know this? And this is the part that's most fascinating. This is the part that I think could speak to most what we're saying today. He says, because the pasuk says, because the obligation of tzedakah, of charity, is de mechsero. The obligation of charity is to help someone get back to what they are missing. The obligation of charity is to get someone back to the level that they were once at, is to get them to the point that they're missing out on something. It's our job to fill that in. And says the Kli Yakar, something so unbelievable. He says, if someone is refusing to exert themselves as required, then potentially you are exempted from even helping them out. And I will point out now, in all honesty, it is very unclear where we draw this line. Through reading a number of responses on this topic, whether it's Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, or the Shevet HaKahati, or Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, the line where we could say definitively, that person is no longer helping themselves, I don't have an obligation to help them, is a very gray area. It's an extremely difficult question to say, because we're never in their shoes. We don't know each person's situation. But nevertheless, so it while that idea is, while it's true, we are hard pressed after speaking to a number of the local Rabbanim here as well. I think some of the Rabbanim in the room I asked this question. It's very difficult to invoke this on a practical sense to say, thank you for coming. We're not going to help you have food for this upcoming holiday because you're not working hard enough. It's very difficult to invoke this on a practical level. The idea holds true. The idea is saying is that it's not only that I don't have an obligation to help a poor person if they're not helping themselves, but what the Kli Yakar is saying is something fascinating. He's saying we do not even view him as someone in need. If you are not choosing to help yourself, if you are not trying to bring your own salvation, it must be that you are not truly in pain. It must be that you are not missing yourself. The only way that we could say that you are chaser, that you are missing, is if you've attempted to take it. Otherwise, we won't even view you as chaser. We won't even view you as missing something. At this stage, that perhaps stimulus checks, which are, again, as I said, proactively helping someone in advance, this would not be the way, because, again, they are showing, nobody is showing any effort. The whole point, presumably a positive point, that we indiscriminately give to every single person, regardless of situation, is that they are not helping themselves in advance, which we chose as a positive aspect. But I think this Kli Yakar would tell us, giving someone money, giving someone funds, without them first showing a level of investment, is not helping them because they are not even missing something necessarily. Therefore, at this point, I think we essentially said there are three reasons why perhaps a stimulus check is not the answer. As we said, based off of Cook, that Shemitah's goal and the debt cancellation, while of course, absolutely, is to help the Ani find himself, find his footing, recalibrate his finances. At the end of the day, the goal is to remind us that God is in control, that God determines my finances, he determines your finances, regardless of whether you currently are in the status of a quote-unquote rich person or currently in the status of someone who needs to ask for help. At the end of the day, we all are reliant on God. And therefore, I was claiming that a stimulus check will take our minds off the prize, because now nobody would be reliant on God, or nobody would have to turn to God, because they know every single month they have a check coming in. Furthermore, tzedakah, charity's primary goal, as we saw, is to get someone back on their feet, is to get it to the point that ad shelo yitzarech lebrios lishol, that you no longer need to ask a question. You no longer need to ask someone for help. And therefore, a stimulus check, by definition, while it's true, you would no longer, no one needs to ask for help. So therefore, maybe everyone's taken care of, but on the flip side, by definition, we are asking for help because every month we have money coming in. And furthermore, the third point we just made is this idea of the Kli Yakar, that perhaps someone is not viewed even as missing out on something if they didn't put in the effort. Perhaps giving out finances in advance is sending a message against this idea that the goal is to work together. Another phrasing that I saw to explain the Kli Yakar was the idea of v'ahavta l'recha kamocha. Your job is to help, to love someone as you love yourself. I have an obligation to love you the way I love myself. But if you yourself are not helping yourself out, then I could flip that around on you and say, okay, so it's not my job to help you as well, because I only love you as much as you love yourself. I shouldn't love you more than you love yourself. A fascinating formulation. Going back to our original point, what about in our utopian world? What about the fact that, while it might be true, there is no specific obligation to help out someone before they need it? before they request it. Certainly, we can all agree that poverty is a bad thing and that we want it to end world hunger. I think it's important to reflect on the view that our rabbis had in the Talmud about poverty. There's a fascinating Gemara in the discussion in Shabbos, in Maseches Shabbos, discussing the world to come, and specifically discussing Yemos HaMashiach. When the Messiah comes, what is the world going to be like? Shmuel, one of the Amoraim, one of the rabbis in the Talmud, says as follows. He says, there is not going to be a difference between nowadays, between what we have now, and in the days of Mashiach. And what is his proof? We're not going to discuss exactly what the days of Mashiach will look like, but his proof is what's fascinating. His proof is the following pasuk. Ki lo yechdal evyon mikarev ha'aretz. That what? The poor will never cease from the land. That, says Shmuel, part and parcel of this world, the way of this world, synonymous with the way our world is run, is that there are socioeconomic strata, that there are differences in reality of people's finances. Even nowadays, that's true, that we see. But even in Yemos HaMashiach, which in so many of us view as a utopian world, the definition of the world remaining the same is the socioeconomic status of people. There will always be aniyim. In fact, the very next Gemara says something borderline distressing. The Gemara says that every single person, la'olam yevakesh adam rachamim, every single person at all times should be requesting from God his compassion. His compassion as it pertains to parnasa, as it pertains to finances. Why? He says something fascinating. He says the Gemara, she'im hu loba, if you yourself will not come to poverty, babino, your son perhaps will become to poverty. V'im bino loba, and if your next generation won't become to poverty, then ben binoba, then the following generation will become to poverty. And says the Talmud, galgal hu shechozer olam, poverty, finances are a cycle. Says the words of our rabbis, that poverty is a cycle. Finances are a cycle. As we discussed at the beginning, God runs God determines everything as it pertains to our finances. And says the Talmud, it is a cycle. And even if today one may be stricken with poverty, or today one may be rich, it is always going to change, it is always going to develop, and you might be on the flip side in the future, or if not, your generations. And therefore, we have an obligation, says the Talmud to continue, of tzedakah. We have an obligation of helping out those in need, and that is what Shemitah is coming to do once every 7 years, to reset those finances. The obvious question one could ask, though, is why? Why would God set it up this way? Why would God make it such that this is true, this very distressing Gemara, that galgal hu shechozer l'olam, that if not now, then in 100 years your family will be poor? That's an extremely depressing Gemara. Why would the Talmud tell us this? Why would God set up a world that this were the case? Why is it that the communal ideal, seemingly, of the Jewish world is one that there will always be poverty? There's an extremely vague, cryptic Talmud passage that discusses this question. That Tornus Rufus, one of the Roman governors, asked the following question to one of our leading rabbis. He asked Rabbi Akiva, Im Elokechem Oev Aniyim. Im Elokechem Oev Aniyim Hu. If your God loves poverty, loves those who are poor so much, there are countless mitzvos, as we've discussed. Shemitah, once every 7 years, we will make all the food, land, ownerless. We will make all of the money, all of your obligations, free. We will allow you to reset your finances, quote unquote, have a bankruptcy built in to the Jewish system. We have a mitzvah of tzedakah. We have different levels of tzedakah. If God loves poor people so much, if God loves those stricken with poverty so much that he's built in so many mechanisms to help them out, if God controls the finances, mipnei ma ino mefarnesam, why would God not just give them money? Why would he set up a system that we have to have all of these halachos, that we have to have all of these complicated laws and helpful laws and initiatives to help out the poor? Why not just set up the system? Why would God not just make it that there are no poor people to begin with? And then we would all win and we could just end the conference now. The Gemara answers something very cryptic to save us all from Gehenna. Rav Moshe Feinstein, one of the leading rabbeim of the 20th century explains it as follows. Everyone could see I have a picture of me and, this is the only picture I could find of my of me and my daughter cooking. It's not really cooking, but for the sake of the, I think it's at the chocolate factory cooking together. What's the significance of that? Really, Rav Moshe Feinstein says as follows. Why did God set up a system that they're aniyim? Because in truth, it's God's job to provide. That's absolutely correct. Similarly, when we have, it's a parent's job to cook for Shabbos. It's a parent's job to cook at a meal. So why do we ever let children into the kitchen? Why do we ever allow our kids to pretend like they're spicing the food or pretend like they're mixing the batter? What is the benefit of that? Says Rav Moshe Feinstein, the goal is we are trying to show our children what it means to do something. We're illustrating for our children, illustrating with our children, sending them out to do what we are really trying to accomplish. So it's true that God could have himself made all of the poor people rich. The same way we ourselves could have cooked the food without our kids standing there pretending to mix the batter for a few minutes. But we want to teach our children how to give. We want to teach our children how to look to cook, how to look to build. So too, God is trying to teach us how to see others' pain, how to look beyond ourselves. If everyone had everything, if we had a built-in system that nobody had any struggles, nobody had any pain, nobody had any needs, unfortunately, that would be no different, said Rav Moshe Feinstein, than if we all just cooked on our own. We would never be able to teach the next generation how to give, how to look for, how to go out of your way to help others, to be there for others, and search for others. So I think what the message of Shemitah is, and what the message that Rav Moshe is trying to tell us, Rav Moshe Feinstein is trying to tell us, is that it's our job, our opportunity, once every 7 years, to not just realize that there are those in pain, that there are those suffering, that there are those in need around us, and we absolutely could and should and need to help them in any possibly way we can. But we really have to realize, perhaps most importantly, that it is all up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it is all up to God. That Kikra Shmita LaHashem, that finances are run by God, and it is our role, it is our responsibility to ensure that at all times we remember that. So perhaps a stimulus check, as I suggested, is not the answer. Perhaps something along the lines of, beyond really the scope of this conversation, maybe a negative income tax in which someone has to show some level of income and then get in addition to that. Perhaps not for right now, but the point remains that it is our job to embrace the fact that God runs the world, and therefore we have to try to do and go the same way that God does and go out of our way to help others and invest in others and build with others and do our best to make it that now we all understand that Hashem runs the world and God is there for us, and it is our opportunity to invest in one another and care for one another and love one another. Thank you very much. Rav Rimon is beginning in about 7 minutes, and I'm happy to take any questions. Thank you very much.